Wearing a Men's Warehouse outfit makes you confident, like you could do anything, so you dance like no one is watching, even though everyone is watching. Because of the Men's Warehouse outfit, you interview like the job is already yours because it is. Because of the Men's Warehouse outfit, you golf as if the rules don't apply to you because you're too well-dressed for rules. Because of the Men's Warehouse outfit. At Men's Warehouse, get measured, get fitted, get hot, get confident in everything from tailored suits to underwear and all the stuff in between. Love the way you look at Men's Warehouse.
Coming up on Stu Does America, a disgruntled NFL coach claims systemic racism and tries to take down the league. The Jeff Zucker CNN saga gets a sleazy new angle. And the Washington Redskins get a crappy new name, even more racist-y than the original. FaithWire's Dan Andros will join us in a moment to cover it all. So let's get started and do Brian Flores.
Stu Does America.
Well, it's going to be an interesting one, boys and girls. Welcome to the program today. A little bit different than normal. Why? Snowmageddon is here in Texas. We're talking about up to an inch, a full inch of snow. Well, not a full inch, but there in some places where it's been maybe packed up a little bit, it's up to close to a half, maybe a quarter of an inch of snow. So the whole city is shut down. We're not allowed to go anywhere. It's almost like we're back in April 2020 all over again. I am live from my house in my wife's podcast studio. The Lisa Page made me do it, podcast studios, which means I owe her many favors. And so we'll just go on. We'll try to do our best here. It's going to be a little bit different today. We're going to just let it roll. Just sit back a little bit, do a little bit of a conversation here coming up with Dan Andros in a minute. I want to first, though, introduce the sort of first topic we're going to talk about today, and it's Brian Flores. Flores is was the coach of the Miami Dolphins. Before that, he was with the New England Patriots, and that's important to the story today because you kind of need to understand that Flores and the Patriots had a bit of a relationship, and that led to a key part of this whole story. There's three basic things that happened here. Flores has launched a lawsuit against the NFL after being fired by the Dolphins. He was then up for many of the openings when it comes to the head coach positions in the NFL. I think there was 9 of them this year. So he was up for a bunch of them, did interviews with a bunch of them. And before they were even all decided, there's still 5 left, I think, that need to be decided. He decided to sue the NFL. And he accused 3 things. He basically accused them of improperly recruiting players, which is a yawn, basically, hey, the owner said maybe I could use my connections to go try to recruit Tom Brady to the team when he was still a Patriot. Well, everybody wanted Tom Brady on their team, except for me, of course, but I'm a pretty strong-willed individual when it comes to these things. There's also incentivizing losses. This is a huge deal, if this is true. Now, everybody knows this goes on in the NFL, where if you're in last place and you want to get the number one draft pick, yeah, maybe you're not calling your best plays. Maybe your best players are injured this week, right? Injured. There's an incentive to obviously lose some games so you can get that number one pick. Now, the Dolphins in the season they're talking about had an easy path to the number one pick and then started winning games at the end. This is suboptimal for the Dolphins long term, but hey, a coach wants to win games. It's understandable. If there is evidence that the owner was, as alleged, basically bribing his coach to lose games, that's a big scandal. That is, if there's any evidence of this, we'll see. But if that's true, that is a big deal as far as the sport goes. But there's one part that you've probably heard a little bit more about, which is bigger because it goes beyond the sport. It goes to everybody all around the world because, as you know, we are the most racist country that has ever existed in human history. And that's bad. That's bad. Now, of course, it's not true. Not true at all. In fact, if you ask if the United States is a racist country, the appropriate follow-up question to that is always as opposed to what? Because I don't know if you've been to Europe lately. I don't know if you've been to China lately. I don't know if you've been to North Korea lately. Probably not. Maybe you have a timeshare there. It's been a little difficult to go for a little while, but you'll find all around the world a lot of racism exists. Seems to be a human problem instead of just an American problem. But one place it's odd to allege that it is a problem is the National Football League. The National Football League existing in a country that has 12% African Americans, yet 60% of their players are African Americans, the most prized jobs in the entire organization. So why, if they were so racist, would they be hiring black players all the time? Now, Brian Flores, of course, is accusing multiple teams of being racist. And one of the issues associated with this is he's, first of all, just pissed he got fired. And he had a couple of good years. However, this year, when the team was supposed to be a playoff team and supposed to be one of the top teams in the AFC, they started out 1-7. So usually you don't keep your job in that situation. They made a run toward the end of the season and came close to the playoffs, but it wasn't enough, and Flores lost his job. Not necessarily completely due to his performance, but because he was butting heads with the general manager. Interesting fact about that general manager, you may notice he is also African American. So the ownership chose the black general manager over the black coach, and that supposedly is racist. This is dumb. It's not a good point. Not a good series of points. And one of the issues here that we have to deal with is this thing called the Rooney Rule. I won't bore you with the entire history of it, but the basic idea was there was complaints that there were not enough black coaches, and so they decided to put it in their rule book that you had to interview black coaches whenever you had an opening. Now, intent. All right, I mean, maybe you want to say the intent is okay. The intent is good. You want to make sure that people are getting a fair chance. There's not really a ton of evidence that this wasn't happening before, but okay, we can explore it. However, in practice, what it is racist. We hear a lot about systemic racism. This is systemic racism, the Rooney Rule. It is in the system, in the rule book, that you have to hire people based on the color of their skin. That's systemic racism. So Flores is upset because he got a bunch of interviews for these jobs, and he suspected some of these teams didn't really want to hire him, didn't really want to consider to hire him. They were just going through the motions for the Rooney Rule. We have to hire a black candidate. I guess let's bring Flores in here. We'll say his name, even though we know we want this other guy. There's an issue with text messages and Bill Belichick, who's the coach of the New England Patriots, because Belichick, oopsie doopsie, texted Brian Flores and said, "Hey, I heard you got the Giants job. Congratulations." And Brian Daboll, who is another Brian, also who knows Bill Belichick, actually was getting the job. So Bill Belichick texted the wrong Brian. This is what happens, I think, when you get in your 70s. You just start texting the wrong people all the time. So that went on. And he's using this as evidence that they never wanted to hire me. They had already told Bill Belichick, which is really nothing more than a rumor, but they had told Bill Belichick that Brian Daboll already had the job, and they weren't really seriously coming to me with an opportunity to be hired. So big lawsuit going on, racist implications all over the place. We're going to get into the details and with a bunch of stuff today, as we're going to have a little conversation today. Dan Andros joins me here in just a second. All right, this winter, you can upgrade your daily routine with Bespoke Post and their new seasonal lineup of must-have Box of Awesome collections. I get Boxes of Awesome. Right, deliver right to me. First of all, I'm awesome, so obviously I'm getting Boxes of Awesome. But in addition to that, Bespoke Post has a great lineup of these things, no matter what you're into, whether, you know, they have all sorts of examples. There's tons of them. And basically, you go to boxofawesome.com and you take their quiz. And with their quiz, kind of gives you a selection of what kind of box would be right for you. What are your interests? It's free to sign up. You can cancel anytime. And each box costs only $45. Now, they say, they give me the little talking points here of like what their product's about. And they say it has over $70 worth of gear inside. This is true. However, it is inefficient in explaining how awesome these boxes are because it's way more than $70. Everyone I've ever seen has been way more than $70. You get 20% off your monthly box, the first one, when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and enter the code STU at checkout. 90% of everything that comes in your Box of Awesome is from a small, up-and-coming brand. This is cool stuff. Not everybody around you is going to have it. Check it out. Boxofawesome.com. The code is STU for 20% off your first box. Box of Awesome. Stew.com. Code is Stew. Should we consider, I don't know, not making decisions based on color of skin? Is that something the United States wants to, I don't know, maybe investigate, maybe partake in a little bit? I thought that was the plan the whole time. Apparently, that's changing now. Dan Andros from FaithWire.com joins me. Dan, you know, this Rooney Rule, the whole Brian Flores thing is just a giant mess.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, first of all, my first thought is the whole thing seems ridiculous for a complaint about racism, et cetera, for a guy that was making $3+ million a year. You know, it's kind of like how many people have a job where they make $3 million or more a year and you're finding a way to complain about this? It seems just off the top there, it seems a little ridiculous that I have to listen to these complaints about someone who's making $3 million a year, one of the most high profile jobs in the country. And so then you have this whole rule come into play. And I don't know. I mean, you look at the way that it all went down and the Belichick emails, all that is hilarious. But I just can't understand the logic behind here. It seems like the NFL should be the one he's, you know, that the whole rule itself should be what he's mad at, not the teams.
Yeah, you know, I mean, first of all, you're right. They pay him over $3 million a year, and they hired him in the first place. I don't know, like, why would a racist team hire him and a black general manager in the first place? It makes absolutely no sense. But beyond that, there's this whole thing that happens, I think, when this type of lawsuit gets filed. It actually discourages teams in the future from going this route because they're afraid if they fire someone for going 1-7 with a playoff team that they may very well wind up getting in the news cycle, getting sued, and I'll have all this other stuff go on. You're actually sort of hurting the entire process here of hiring more minority coaches by attacking this team for hiring you initially, and then on your way out, you want to, you know, leave every bridge burned.
Yeah. And the whole rule, I mean, the way it's set up, it kind of forces these teams into these scenarios because instead of just looking at the person you want, and it sounds like the Giants had the person that they wanted, but then because you have this rule, now you're forced to, we already know the person we want, but we have to fulfill this rule or else we're going to get in trouble. And so, you know, when you have the person you want and then that person doesn't happen to be a minority, that's a problem. You know, now it's a problem because of this rule. Now you have to do these shenanigans because what Flores was saying was that it was a sham interview and, you know, they'd already picked their guy. Well, it wouldn't have happened at all if this rule wasn't in place. You wouldn't even gotten talked to. And it's like, maybe you could have gone in there. This rule probably, even if they had picked their guy, probably gave him more of a chance at getting that job than he would have had previously because he could have gone in there and just blown their socks off and just had an amazing interview. And they could have been like, you know what? We got to change course here. So I don't know. It just, the whole complaint just seems ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, that was, I think, believe that was Mike Tomlin's story where he came in. He wasn't the favorite for the job at the time, but he blew them away in the interview. They wound up loving him. And now he's been, I mean, one of the longest tenured coaches in the NFL right now. And like, I think fundamentally we have to look at this rule for what it is, which is if you are going to require that every team comes in and gives an interview to a minority coach, you are by definition telling them that even if they have the best candidate on the market, they have to come through with this interview anyway. And when that interview is going to be a sham if they already knew who they want to hire. And right. You can't complain about it being a sham when the whole thing is directed to make teams commit to sham interviews. They have to do it by rule. If they don't do the sham interview, they get in trouble. And now apparently if they do the sham interview, they get in trouble.
Right. The whole thing seems a little demeaning to me. It's the similar feel to Joe Biden, you know, saying that he's going to only hire, you know, an African-American female to the bench, to the Supreme Court. And it's like, if I'm that person, and now look, of course, I'd take it, right? If I was the one that benefited from that, all right, I'll take it. But in some way, though, it kind of takes away from the achievement because you didn't beat out everyone else. You know, there was just an external factor that you had no control over, being born with a certain color skin. And that gave you, in this particular case, because of people wanting to fulfill, you know, a certain, you know, makeup of the court, you know, racially wise, that propelled you into a lead over other candidates. And so to me, that almost like takes away from it. It feels like it was given to you rather than earned to some extent. I mean, obviously, all of the whoever gets picked is going to have earned it to some extent, but you're still going to have that, wow, would I have gotten this if I wasn't this color? And I think that's wrong. I mean, I think you would, you know, you want to make sure that that you're not intentionally leaving out a candidate who's a minority. But at the same time, if you're forced to do it, the meaning of the accomplishment gets sort of diminished.
Yeah. And when you bring up the Biden example of the Supreme Court, we went through those numbers. You were eliminating something like 98% of possible people that could come for these jobs. And it's like, well, you were the best of that 2%. And that's really hard to do. You know, it's not without its level of achievement, but it doesn't mean the same thing. And, you know, look, we know this stuff goes on. We know the identity politics game gets played, especially in politics. But it's interesting to note that the NFL is the one with the rule here. The NFL is requiring an interview for a minority for every candidate. And sometimes it's multiple minorities. Now they've changed this rule so many times. That's not the case. The Democratic Party doesn't even say that. They don't say they are requiring an interview for minority candidates. This is like, it's really pathetic that an organization like the NFL that is designed to be decided in all of its contests decided by merit and merit only, supposedly, has a rule that takes away the merit. It's not that a black coach is not the best candidate. They very well may be, but they should have to win a full competition just like everybody else.
Yeah. And it shouldn't be shocking when there's not, I mean, you probably know the stats better than me off the top of your head, Stu, but what percentage of Americans are African-American right now? There are, what, 32 NFL teams?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's 32 jobs you're talking about. So the odds of finding minorities to fill 32 positions, it just seems unlikely, right? Like, and so, you know, there's only one or two, you know, black coaches in the league. And it's like, well, just look at the numbers. Like having any representation there would be quite an achievement.
Yeah. And here's the thing. And this is because if you bring up these points, people will say, sure, yes, we know we shouldn't make decisions based on color of skin, blah, blah, blah. That's so antiquated. And then they'll get to the point where they say, well, 60% of the league is black. And therefore, 60% of the coaches should be black. This is a false argument. The premise of the argument is nonsensical. The skill set you need to be a player in the NFL is not the same skill set that you need to be a coach in the NFL. And what happens here is African Americans completely outperform white people, except for punting. We're really good at punting. But generally speaking, outperform white people when it comes to the merit-based positions of these the high salary positions of being a player. So, but like that, you know, like think of the fat offensive lineman that's 375 pounds. And then, you know, think of Terrell Owens, who's in perfect, you know, physical shape when he's leaving the league. You know, DJ Metcalf. That is not the same skill set that Andy Reid has. But Andy Reid is going to go to the Hall of Fame as a coach because he's able to do that job. Now, there's plenty of players that have come on to do that job. But what's interesting here is you have a population of about 12% of African Americans that make up about 60% of the league. Obviously, that's not racist unless you're saying it's racist against whites. I don't know what you're saying here. And when it comes to coaches, what happens with these players? There's plenty of white players in college. There's plenty of white players in high school. And those kids love football just as much as the African-American players. And then they get to these high levels and they get outperformed by African-Americans. And what do? They go into coaching earlier. They start their coaching career years before many of these African-American players because they're still playing while, you know, people who are white are like, I mean, unless I'm punting, I can't get on the team.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just a different skill set. And it's not that African-Americans don't have those skills. Of course they do. but white people are made up of 70% of this country. So they're going to get a lot of the jobs. That is not racism. That's just reality.
Yeah. So let me understand your point here, Stu. Are you saying that if activists want to see more African-American coaches, they need to encourage African-Americans to be worse athletes?
Yes. That is exactly what I'm saying.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I got understood.
Start dropping more passes, throw it over people's heads.
You'll have no other choice but to go into coaching. You'll increase the ranks.
It's true. Well, okay, got it. These are not the jobs, Dan, that I grew up together in Connecticut, and we spent about 80% of our time playing sports in the backyard. There were very rare times where we were like, oh, man, let's reenact that Super Bowl moment where the coach called that play. That's not what you want to be when you're a kid. You want to be the player. It's only when you fail at being the player that you go into coaching. That's when you do it. Oh, gosh. All right. Let me take a break here. And we'll come back more with Dan Andros at Dan Andros on Twitter. Make sure to follow him. Back with more in a second. All right. Let's talk about built.com. Built Bar is, well, you know what? I'm in my house right now. In right behind me is this, you can't really see it. It's kind of a glowing pink sign because I'm in my wife's podcast studio. If you listen to my wife's podcast, there's a very good chance you will hear her talking about Built Bars. She's the one that sort of opened up this world to people at the Blaze because no one had ever really tried them before. My wife, though, gets them all the time. And she started raving about them. And she's been talking to people all around the country about how incredible Built Bars are. They're the best protein bars out there. 180 calories or less, you know, 4 to 5 net carbs, 4 to 5 grams of sugar, high in fiber, high in protein. These things will fill you up for a meal. They will maybe be a great snack, even a dessert. She chills them. They're in the fridge right down the hall as we speak. Don't miss out. If you never tried a Built Bar, you got to try them. Go to built.com. Built.com is the place to go. And if you use the promo code STU15, you'll get 15% off your first order. Now, the promo code is STU15 for 15% off at built.com. Well, CNN has had an interesting couple of days. Kind of out of nowhere yesterday, Jeff Zucker, who's the head of CNN, stepped down really out of nowhere. And as he was stepping down, he said, oh, by the way, during the middle of this Cuomo investigation that we've been doing, someone mentioned I may have been in a multiple year affair with someone that worked for me. And I never really mentioned it. And because of that, bye-bye. So that was kind of the statement, a little bit of a summary. Dan Andros from faithwire.com is with me to talk about it. And Dan, it's interesting to see all this stuff happen. You know, it really couldn't happen to a better organization.
I mean, it sure looks like Chris Cuomo is just setting the place on fire on his way out. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like there has to be more, by the way. I'd like to get your take on this as well, Stu. But to me, there has to be more than just this. And I saw Stelter, a clip of him with, I think, Allison Camerota, whatever her name is, talking about this. And she was shocked. She's like, these are consenting adults. I don't understand why, you know, he has to go because of this. You don't understand. It's not consent that's the problem here. It's that he had this relationship and this woman's getting promoted up the ladder while no one knows that they're having this relationship. And that's just one reason. But it was kind of funny to me that they couldn't see the inappropriateness of not disclosing a relationship like this. In particular, that's just one layer of it. Then you toss in the fact that she used to be flack for Governor Cuomo. And then you had the whole Chris Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo, you know, CNN debacle where they were basically PR for the governor's office there during the COVID crisis. And of course, that's all been shoved down the memory hole. They don't want you to remember that they sat there on air day after day talking about how he's replaced Trump as a leader. He's a de facto president. I mean, you see the clips, the highlight reels that some people have dug up, but they're trying to shove that one down the memory hole. But what a disaster. And but I mean, to me, it looks like Chris Cuomo is just he held on to all this information. They're not giving him the payout he wants. So he's like, all right, you're not going to give me my money. I'm setting the place on fire. Good luck.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. How long did we ask this same question? We asked it 100 times on the show. Why is Chris Cuomo being protected? What does he have on these people? I mean, what on earth is going on? He is a terrible host. He has embarrassed himself tons of times just doing his show. He has terrible ratings. He embarrassed the network. He left quarantine to yell at someone on a bicycle. He faked his exit of quarantine on the air for drama. He did softball interviews with his brother, the governor, in the middle of his scandal where he was letting tens of thousands of elderly people go back to nursing homes where COVID was present. All of this was going on. I mean, there's way too many examples to even count. And they kept backing him over and over and over again. It was inexplicable. And now, you know what? Not so inexplicable, because we know that he knew that his brother's former aide was hooking up with the boss. And that's why he did this. And now they want him to, he wants to get his money, and he's pissed off he was being held accountable. So he is saying, I'm going to burn the place down. I mean, this is the quote from Brian Stelter yesterday. Number one is the Chris Cuomo reference. Cuomo was fired in December, and he's not going out quietly. He was fired, and there were reports that he wasn't going to get paid the millions of dollars that were going to be on the remainder of his contract. This is from Brian Stelter at CNN on CNN. He said, so as a source said to me earlier today, he was trying to burn the place down. He was going to court, trying to burn the place down, claiming that he had incriminating information about Zucker and Gullist. This is the woman he was hooking up with. It's a real problem. And, you know, there's even more to the story now where it appears Jeff Zucker and Gullist, the woman he was hooking up with, and the former Cuomo aide, were actually advising Cuomo themselves on the initial press conferences that then they would praise on CNN. Yeah. This is so incestuous.
Yeah. But first of all, I'd not seen that quote from Stelter. And so I'm actually shocked that I agree with Stelter.
Unless you were his source.
Yeah, yeah. But what's incredible, though, is that, remember, this is the same Brian Stelter who just a couple days ago was out there going, I can't believe that people trust Joe Rogan more than they trust CNN. I don't understand why. And
yeah,
now that then the house is on fire after that, you're like, oh, OK, maybe that's why this happens. But yeah, I mean, just utter disgrace. And it's no shock to me why absolutely nobody trusts CNN. The fact that not only was Chris Cuomo helping his brother out, which we've now seen, he must have saved stuff because if they were actually also doing it, the president of CNN and the former governor's flack, who, by the way, she still has a job there, I think, as far as
she's staying right now.
Mm-hmm. Which is, how does that work? I mean, is that not the most awkward walk back into the office? But what a disaster for CNN, you know, to have their president, like, just, they're just political hacks. I mean, and look, still, we were at CNN with Glenn, what is that now, 14 years ago, 15 years ago? And, like, they had a liberal bias, but it wasn't like this. I mean, it wasn't this bad.
No, I don't think the people in the higher levels were actually advising candidates and politicians on how to please the press and then doing gushing coverage of it. And this is one of the things that bothered me so much with Chris Cuomo, and that he actually emailed a full speech to his brother. And it was like the first word we heard from Andrew Cuomo about this was basically Chris Cuomo's speech that he penned. And it's like Chris Cuomo is writing a speech. It's going to the governor. The governor's saying it, being covered by CNN and analyzed by CNN. This is the same thing that happened with the press conferences. Jeff Zucker and his girlfriend were calling up Andrew Cuomo and saying, hey, here's how you can present this information. Here's a good way to do the press conferences. Cuomo did that, went on the air, took their advice, and then got basked in praise by the people employed by Jeff Zucker and his girlfriend. There's no credibility here at all.
It's incredible because, I mean, I work for CBN now. We're a Christian broadcasting organization. So that's clearly our perspective that we're coming from, is from a Christian, you know, point of view on things. So that is our admitted bias when we're trying to report the news. And like, you know, we're a fraction of the size of CNN, the world's, you know, ginormous news leader or whatever they call themselves these days. And the stuff they would do like that, like you just went through on a day-to-day basis, is stuff I would never even consider doing in my wildest dreams. And yet places like The Blaze and CBN get criticized and ridiculed as these right-wing propaganda machines. And it's just, it's so embarrassing that if I'm a journalist at CNN, because I'm sure they still have a few left there that actually do a good job, you know, just because they're so big, I would be livid at this stuff. I'd be like wanting to get out of there because it just ruins your own reputation as a journalist.
Yeah. And then oddly, the instinct of an Allison Camerota is to go on the air and defend Jeff Zucker.
Yeah.
You know, like, wouldn't you be frustrated to hear these sorts of things? You know, we did work in this building for a while back in the day. And it's been a long time now, but there are still people that we worked with that are there. And you know, at least I can vouch for those people. They're, you know, they're very good, smart people. And again, they might even be liberal, but they would not consider doing something like this. It's so far out of the realm of journalism. It's so far away from anything that could even be considered mildly borderline. These are actions of people who believed they were powerful enough to never be questioned. And now that they are being questioned, the House of Cards is falling apart.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say, too, that I think we've seen a shift, you know, from the time we were there and even well after that. I would say it's Trump brought this on, that they so overreacted to Trump that they went into full blown activism. And I really think that people at the top that are these uber liberals, these elite liberals like Zucker and everybody else, that they felt and they were pressured, I think, by activists that you have to do something with your position of power. You can't just sit by and let Trump get in office again. And so I think that's why you saw NPR and everybody else bury the Hunter Biden story, which now they're miraculously looking back into that, the Hunter Biden laptop. And so I really think you saw a shift during the Trump administration because they were so appalled as leftists that Trump was able to win that election that they didn't want to see that happen again. And I really do think that they flipped a switch and they went from, you know, a left-leaning journalistic outfit to, you know, with liberal biases that leaks through to the coverage to full-blown activism.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. The Trump era really did poison them in a way where they just said, you know, this whole journalism thing is getting in the way. You know, we can't do this anymore. We can't allow someone like Trump to be in power. It's too important. It was a form of desperation, really, and it made them cross whatever journalistic lines they had left. Let me take a break here, Dan. We're going to come back on the other side with a little bit more. Dan Andros from FaithWire.com. He's at Dan Andros on Twitter. Back in a second. Here I am in my home, and I'm not currently looking to sell this thing. I kind of like it, and I like Texas, and I don't want to leave it. In our home here, we have a little podcast studio for my wife. Her podcast, Lisa Page, made me do it. She has a podcast, and she's on Instagram all the time, and so this is a very Instagram-friendly room. And, you know, like, you got to find... I wish I could show you this room. I can't really direct the camera around, but I am surrounded by more pink on the walls and more furry, like, blankets and trinkets, and everything's rose gold or pink. All I'm telling you is, like, this isn't the room that I would design for myself. It's the room she designed for herself. If you have a home where you have a room like that, you love it more than anything else. And sometimes when you are that connected to a home, it's hard to get your head screwed on straight about what you're supposed to get for a house when you have lots of memories and things like that. You want to be able to have a real estate agent that can kind of just talk you down and say, look, this is the truth of the matter right now. This is what this house is worth. This is what you need to do to it. If you're going to a new home, you don't want to walk in and fall in love with something, and then you're overbidding. They now have someone who understands and has a sober view of the market in crazy times, which are going on right now. It's realestateagentsitrust.com to find that person, no matter where you are in the country. realestateagentsitrust.com. Welcome back, Stu Does America from home. Today, the new Census Bureau report is out. Finds that in 2019, just under two-thirds of American kids lived with two married parents. 93% lived with at least one biological parent. But there's some really interesting breakdowns of this. First of all, there's some bad news in this for kids. In 2019, 38.1% of children who resided with two unmarried parents were living below the poverty line, whereas 7.5% of children living with two married parents lived in poverty. 38% for unmarried parents, only 7% with married parents. Here's the chart, and you see it broken down by racial groups. So I want to talk to you about that here in a second. But first, Dan Andrus is here with us from faithwire.com. I don't know. Are you shocked that the results are not as good if you're not, you know, participating fully in the old school nuclear family, Dan?
No, I'm not shocked at all. I mean, this is just another statistical confirmation on what we've seen bear out time and time again over history, is that the best model, the best setup is a mom, a dad, married, nuclear family, that basic setup. That by far and away, the statistics show out that you're going to have better successes in life when it comes to avoiding crime, education, all the whole host of statistics. And we see it play out time and time again. And so not surprised to see yet another statistic bear it out.
Interesting, too, that it seems to be getting worse. Let me give you this breakdown real quick. That number, 38.1% of children who resided with two unmarried parents. So you have two parents in the household. This is not a split family. They're just not married. That number has gone from 27% in 2001 to 38.1%. So more kids in poverty with that group. The opposite has happened with married families. In 2001, it was only 10% of parents with 10% of children living with a married couple had these issues. It's down to 7.5%. These differences are becoming more and more dramatic as the left continues to encourage you to do them.
Yeah. Yeah. And you see that the idea of the nuclear family has been under attack for some time now. I mean, even in the Black Lives Matter statement that was scrubbed from the internet, they specifically talk about dismantling the idea of the nuclear family. And, you know, you see the push now from the radical left to normalize things like polyamory and even divorce, sort of this kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say celebrated per se, but it's this sort of very much accepted more than it was idea that, you know, hey, if we're just not getting along, let's just go ahead and get divorced. But we're still taking care of those kids as best as we can. And I just think those ideas that are often pushed by the radical left are contributing to that dismantling of the family. And so many of these issues that we see play out in cities and elsewhere can go back to the family. And it's not the end-all, be-all solution to everything, but it certainly increases your chances of avoiding some of the more, you know, catastrophic pitfalls that kids can find themselves in.
It's true. You know, it's not, some families suck. There's no doubt about it. But it does increase your chances. I'm glad you brought up BLM here for a second, because I think this is one of the more disturbing parts of this report. They broke down a percentage of all children living with two married parents by race and Hispanic origin. And what you see here is, first of all, the highest percentage of two parents is in Asian households. And, they basically kick our ass in everything. Yep. So we're used to that. You see a very similar level between, whites and Hispanics and overall all groups. It's considerably down, though. For example, white alone is 75% roughly. But black families, we're talking about 37%, about half the rate of living with two parents in the household. And it strikes me as this is really a factor of the African-American community has been most targeted by this propaganda, by these leftist groups. They have been victimized more by these leftist groups than other racial categories. And you see something like this, it's really sad. It paints a difficult picture of the future. And I think it's explainable. If you dabble too much in progressivism, you get results like this.
Yeah. And I mean, I remember, Stu, from your research in Inconvenient Book that Glenn wrote back in the day. And, you know, it just showed that, you know, the inner cities that were largely made up of African-American that were Democratic controlled for decades. And no improvement whatsoever. And yet there's this just incredible grip on the voting block there that African Americans vote in such high numbers for Democrats. It's really one of the more remarkable things, I think, that has stuck. And I mean, part of it is Republicans doing a really bad job in offering a counter to some of these policies that have not worked. You've tried that for 50 years. How's that working out for you? You keep blaming Republicans for this, and you've yet to even try something different in your city to see if it gets better. Or forget about the politicians, you know, just really focusing on the family. And, the, you know, that Asian statistic is really interesting to me because when you look at shortly after World War II, not a pleasant time for Asians to be in America, you know, not exactly a highly trusted group at that time. I mean, for crying out loud, you know, FDR put them in camps because we couldn't trust them. And so obviously that carried over, that sentiment carried over shortly after, you know, the war ended. But, and even in California, they were specifically making laws so that Asians would have a harder time getting ahead. They couldn't own certain things. And I forget all the specifics of the laws off the top of my head, but there were laws hampering them. And they found a way to counter that. They really focused on education. And as you notice there, they focused on family. They kept those families together, family-owned businesses, running small businesses, making sure that education was a priority. And you can see how that has very much worked out in large part for a great number of Asian Americans here. And so I think, you know, any group would be wise, any person would be wise to take a note from that and say, you know, aside from, you know, from me as a Christian perspective, that's a biblical mandate, but just from common sense looking at it, saying, oh, hey, that seems to be working out. Maybe this is something that we should value in our family.
Yeah, it's nice when those things line up. You know, it's actually good results. The thing you're probably supposed to be doing anyway. Dan Andros, faithwire.com is the place you could find him, at Dan Andros on Twitter. And of course, the YouTube page as well. CBN does a lot of great coverage. We love CBN. They do great stuff over there as well. Dan, thanks so much for coming on and participating in the strangest episode of Stu Does America in history.
Indeed. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's been a little bit of a different show today, I've noticed. We do appreciate you tuning in the middle of Texas Snowmageddon, where basically we have about an inch of snow outside, and we are doing the show from home today. So we do appreciate you tuning in. Ainsley joins me, my daughter. Say hello.
Hi.
Say hello to the people. And Zach, say hello. Hi. Yeah. How'd you guys, have fun with the snow today?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought so. Yeah.
Not really.
Not really? Yeah, Ainsley dumped snow on Zach's face earlier. There's a little bit of a controversy of all that. My day has been a little different, a little crazy. I do hope you understand. Thanks to my wife, Lisa Page. Lisa Page made me do it for giving me the podcast studio access, which is very important for us, of course. We do appreciate you tuning in to Blaze TV. BlazeTV.com/Stu is the promo code. Go there. That's the link. Go there, use the promo code STU. You will save $10 off your subscription to Blaze TV, and you'll be helping fund these kids. This kid eats tons and tons of food. I have to keep feeding him. She gymnastics and volleyball and baseball. We have to pay for all these.